7. Rog Taylor and Michael driving home with you this afternoon. We got a busy afternoon, folks, so I'm telling you, no screwing up on the roads out there. We got no time for traffic issues. Here in just a minute, we're going to talk with Dylan Scott. He's a reporter from Talking Points Memo, and we're going to talk about the Medicaid gap. And then at 3:45, we're going to talk with Libby Cogswell. She is the township supervisor for Oshtemo Township. There, they're considering a millage increase to pay for extra fire protection. One of my favorite people of all time to talk to, Amy Harden, is going to join us as we get to know a woman whose last name is Lyons. I wasn't familiar with her until the last couple of weeks, and familiarity has bred contempt. And then finally, we're going to talk with Dave Buskirk at 4:40 this afternoon. That's why I'm telling you, play it straight out there on the roads, folks. We got no time for accidents this afternoon. And let's get rolling. Joining me now from Talking Points Memo is Dylan Scott. Dylan, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Roger. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. About half the states are expanding Medicaid. This is all a part of the ACA or Obamacare, however you want to refer to it. Michigan finally went ahead and expanded Medicaid, not leaving the money on the table, but then did it so late and they refused to give it immediate effect, which means Medicaid in Michigan doesn't expand until the 1st of April. And Dylan is going to talk to us about what impact it has on the country when half the country has expanded Medicaid and the other half didn't. Dylan, what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, Roger. I mean, as you might know and as your listeners might know, the intention when Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act was written and when it was passed and for the first couple years that it was around, states weren't, frankly, supposed to have a choice about Medicaid expansion. It was supposed to happen automatically. The federal government was going to provide most of the funding for it, and it was going to make up about half of, or it was going to cover about half the people that Obamacare was going to cover in total.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the Supreme Court issued its ruling last June upholding the law as a whole, they also included this ruling because one of the questions that was in front of them, though it wasn't given nearly as much attention at the time as the individual mandate arguments, was whether the federal government could require the states to expand Medicaid, which is technically a joint state-federal program that both the state and the federal governments provide money for.
Sure.
And the court decided that the law had overstepped the federal government's bounds, and so the best that the federal government could do was give states a choice. They could make the offer, so to speak. They could say, we're going to put up this significant amount of funding for you to expand Medicaid to your population under 133% of the federal poverty level. But states, in the end, would be able to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so here over the last couple of about 18 months, states have been making those decisions. And as you said, we've ended up with it split right down the middle for the time being. 25 states and D.C. have decided to expand, and 25 states have decided not to, which there's still a little bit of wiggle room. I'm sure some more states will be maybe changing their minds during their next legislative sessions.
But, yeah, Pennsylvania is on the cusp, right? Isn't that one of the states that's still considering?
That's right. Their governor has said who's a Republican who was swept into office in 2010, their governor has said, I'd be willing to expand Medicaid, but only if the federal government gives me this, this, and this in return. So he wants to reform the program as a whole in exchange for expanding it. And it's my understanding that the federal government would have to sign off on that, grant a waiver in the bureaucratic language.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's still to be determined. But there's certainly, and there's some other states, you know, Virginia just elected a Democratic governor that's who ran on being in support of expansion. So maybe early next year when their legislative session comes back, it may, you know, that might give some momentum to expansion that in those states. But for the time being, it looks like the field is sort of set. And to get back to what the Medicaid gap that you referred to at the beginning, the way that the law was written, again, it was the expectation was that everybody below this line, 133% of the federal poverty level, would be covered by Medicaid, and everybody above that would get private insurance on the marketplaces that opened up in October.
Mm-hmm.
But because of a weird kink, and there's a long backstory behind it, but the bottom line is there's a kink in the law now that states have a choice between expanding or not expanding. And that kink is that everybody from 100% of the poverty level, so right at poverty, up to 133%, even those people in states that aren't expanding Medicaid, they can still get tax credits if they go onto the marketplaces and purchase private insurance. So those people, even though they were supposed to get covered by Medicaid expansion originally, they're still going to get covered just in a different way and not really as the law originally intended.
Okay.
But the law did not have, again, that was sort of a mistake in the law. And so the way it's worked out now is that anybody in a state, well, anybody below poverty in a state that's not expanding Medicaid is not going to be able to get covered in any way, and they're not going to get any financial assistance to purchase private insurance, which basically makes it impossible for them to get insurance, because obviously if they're uninsured now, it's probably because it's too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the 5 million or so people in those non-expanding states that Obamacare was supposed to cover, who now aren't going to be covered because their states have decided not to expand Medicaid.
Do you see any pressure in the future on those states who have decided not to participate to participate? Or is this a permanent situation that the country is going to be evenly split between those that expanded and those that didn't, and the 5 million people, collateral damage that end up with no health care, is that a permanent situation?
I would guess not, though I certainly don't want to get too much into the game of predictions. But for what it's worth, several times when I've talked to people about that very question, what they've pointed out to me is when Medicaid was originally created back in 1965, it actually took a few years for every state to join into the program, because back then, too, they had to kind of make the effort to participate.
Mm.
And so there was sort of this gradual transition period that took a few years, and it started off about where we're starting off now, where about half of states were participating, half were not. But just a couple of years later, it was up to 49 states, and then Arizona, for a variety of reasons that aren't really important anymore, took a little over a decade, actually, to ultimately participate. But the point being that there was a huge ramp up in the first couple of years from starting at about half of states participating to effectively all of them participating a few years later. So the expectation that's been voiced to me, particularly by supporters of the Affordable Care Act, is that they expect the same thing is going to happen. It's just too good of a deal for states. The federal government's never going to cover less than 90% of the cost for the Medicaid expansion, that they just won't be able to hold out indefinitely. And the other part of that is that there will certainly be, I know because I've talked to some of them, the hospital associations, the other kind of medical groups in almost every state, including those that aren't expanding right away, They are all in support of expansion. Those are obviously influential groups that have people who are going to listen to them in the state legislature. And so while some of these states might have been able to make this sort of ideological stand here in the first year of the expansion to say, no, we're not going to go along with Obamacare, I do think there's this expectation that that's not going to be a tenable for position for them, and eventually they're going to have to come around. Now, how long that takes remains to be seen, but it's certainly not going to be the case that all these groups that support expansion are just going to give up because they didn't win the fight in the first year.
We're talking with Dylan Scott from Talking Points Memo. He's a reporter there. And Dylan, so I'm hearing parallels between the ACA and Medicare Part D. When they both went online, they were both pretty well dorked up at the get-go, and we finally got it right. And the other parallel is the Medicaid component of this. And Medicaid originally started out like this with about half the states. And as you point out, over time, the remaining states, once they realized it wasn't going to go away, couldn't afford to ignore it anymore.
Yeah, I think that's about right. And the Part D comparisons have been made even before healthcare.gov and the state-run marketplaces went live. And I think that they're probably fair. I mean, there's certainly two different programs. But in terms of just the issues that they had with their rollout, in terms of just technological problems that prevented people from signing up from the product right away, that parallel is certainly held. And the other thing that I think is important, and you're hearing this a lot from the administration now into their, you know, for what it's worth, they were even saying this before October 1st when the marketplace is open, is they always expected that initial enrollment was going to be slow, that it would just be the people who really needed health insurance who were going to come out on the first day and sign up for coverage. And similarly, Part D, according to some of the analysis that I've seen, Part D had a very slow rollout. I think only about 10% of people who ultimately ended up signing up for the program had actually done so in the first month that it was open. And so as long as the Affordable Care Act is able to kind of replicate that enrollment pattern that we saw with Medicare Part D and in Massachusetts when they did their health reform law, that Obamacare is largely based on.
Sure.
You're going to see slow enrollment at first, and then when you have these deadlines, December 15th is the last day to sign up if you want your coverage to start on January 1st. March 31st is the last day to sign up, period, if you don't want to be penalized under the individual mandate. It's going to be those deadlines where we're really going to, that's when everybody's going to be scrambling to sign up for coverage. And that was sort of always the expectation, and based on the past experience of Medicare Part D and Massachusetts, it certainly makes sense that things are going to play out that way over the next few months.
Cool. Dylan, I have really enjoyed talking with you. The bad news in that is that means I'll be back in touch in the future because I've enjoyed our conversation. Give listeners just a quick idea of the kind of issues you cover for TPM.
Well, it's a lot of healthcare, especially at the moment. So that, you know, it tends to be whatever the story of the day is here in Washington. So the government shutdown, the issues with Syria, but healthcare is my background. And so I, especially given all the attention that's been paid there lately, that's where my focus has been. So for, yeah, healthcare reporting, that's, we're trying to stay on top of the story just like everybody else. And so we'll hope to have more updates for you as things develop.
Well, I can tell you that you're effectively staying on top of it. One of the best explanations for a lot of this stuff I've heard. Appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Roger.
Have a good one. Dylan Scott from Talking Points Memo. And I didn't realize just how many similarities there were to previous programs. Medicare Part D took a while to get right. Medicaid originally started out with about half the states. All makes sense now, huh? That 22 degrees that is the predicted low for tonight was where we were last night at my house, at least when I got up first thing this morning. I follow a website called The Gas Game to get an idea of where gas prices are going. And last night, he predicted that prices were going to be taking a jump today. And sure enough, that's what's happening. Gas prices in Hastings have already jumped to $3.35. And Plainwell, $3.35 there as well. Gull Road and Richland, which were the lowest prices in the area, have taken a jump. $3.34 in Richland, $3.31 at a couple of stations along Gull Road. So the bottom line is, if you're out and about and you see gas at $3.13 or $3.19 a gallon, you better fill up. Pawpaw, same, $3.35, both in Pawpaw and up at M40 and M43. As we take a look at Three Rivers, gas prices there, surprise, surprise, $3.35. Isn't it funny how the gas goes to the same new price everywhere all at the same time? Sturgis still showing low prices there. Let me take a look and see when they were most recently updated. Well, this one was at 10 o'clock this morning, and it was still $3.05 in Sturgis. Battle Creek, still the best price on the east side of town at 11 Mile, showing at $3.11, and this was updated at $2.41 this afternoon. So prices may be low, still low there. Bottom line, as you're out and about this afternoon, if you see anything less than $3.35, you may want to take advantage of it, put a couple of extra, or leave a couple of extra shekels in your pocket. 32 degrees. Next half hour, we're going to talk about police coverage in Oshtemo Township and the 9/11 situation and how fire dispatching for the township takes place and who should pay for that. At 4 o'clock, we're going to talk with Amy Harden, and then 4:40, we're talking to Dave Busker. You folks are doing a good job keeping the shiny side up out there this afternoon. Still, no traffic incidents to report. W K Z O. 33 degrees. We finally made it above freezing. Here in just a minute, we're going to talk with ace meteorologist Bob Larson, and we'll find out just how long this cold weather is going to go on, and we'll find out when the next bout of cold and snow. He mentioned it being in the middle of next week, and it seems like he said yesterday that It wasn't going to be confined to Berrien County, just the lakeshore. This next one, next week, may impact us, even inland here in southwest Michigan. And following that, we're going to talk with Libby Cogswell from Oshtemo Township. And Oshtemo Township having a hearing tonight on raising the assessment to pay for police protection for the township. And the county is no longer subsidizing deputies that are assigned to a specific township. What that means is the cost per deputy is going up to full price. And as that has happened, we've had to scale back the number of sheriff's deputies patrolling Oshtemo Township. We're going to find out if tonight's meeting and this assessment will fix that problem. We'll also find out if we are going to fix our weather problem, that being cold temperatures. Here's Bob Larson.
Hey, how are you, Roger?
I'm good. We only got to a half inch, maybe an inch of snow, but a lot more than that along the lakeshore.
Yeah, a lot more than that along the lakeshore. There were 4, 5, 6 inches amounts that were common, even heavier amounts in some cases when you round the bend into parts of northwest Indiana. Most of that shutting down, there are still snow flurries, snow showers, if you will, but no longer finding any impressive heavy lake effect bands.
I looked at the radar this morning, and there was one long band running down offshore, maybe 15 miles, but straight north and south.
Yeah, straight north and south. It was a relatively narrow band as well. It was fairly impressive looking on the radar.
Yeah.
But in terms of the distance that it covered north to south, but not a great distance east to west by any means. Just a very narrow band of heavy snow. If you were caught in the middle of that, boy, it was like a raging blizzard. But either side of it, you had to wonder what all the fuss was about. Such is the nature of lake effect.
Yes, yes. The vagaries of lake effect.
Exactly.
Well, what's our word for today, Bob?
Decemberish. That's not even a word, but I've kind of made it up.
But it suits it.
It's, yeah, I mean, obviously weather such as this is not unheard of in November, but this is much more common the first week or two of December, rather than just after Veterans Day, such as it is. It's a cold blast. We've had the lake effect snow. But as I mentioned yesterday, it won't last all that particularly long. We'll stay cold certainly tonight, tomorrow, and tomorrow night. Lower 20s tonight. The scattered snow flurries will dissipate. Skies will clear. And there'll be some sun at times tomorrow. At 38, though, for high. That's still well below average. And after a cold Wednesday night with lows in the 20s, a southwest wind kicks in Thursday, and that'll boost boost temperatures well into the 40s, almost to 50. Right now, we'll say 48 for Thursday afternoon. It may not feel warm by any means because of the fact that the wind will become gusty.
Yeah.
But 48 and windy is still a far cry from what we've seen last night and today.
I have, or I should say had, two trees in my yard that refused to let go of their leaves.
Uh-huh.
Last night seemed to have worked. I'm thinking that by the weekend I'm going to have bare trees, and from what you're saying, maybe an opportunity to clean my yard up.
Yeah, exactly, because the warm-up that we talked about on Thursday at 48 doesn't end there. We're going to be even a little bit milder on Friday. I think Friday we've got a good shot to get to 50, and I do believe we'll be well into the 50s over the weekend. Might even get a 60-degree reading out of this Sunday or Monday.
Oh, hell, I'm going to get my shorts back.
There you go. Now, with that will come some rain, it would appear.
Oh.
There's going to be a rainstorm that comes in, I'm thinking primarily the second half of the weekend, maybe Saturday night, Sunday. So if you got yard work to do, your best bet is Friday or Saturday before the rains move in. And as I touched on yesterday, after that rain, looks like another blast of cold weather and lake effect snow starting with a week from today, next Tuesday. And this time around, the flow looks more westerly, so that could drive that lake effect snow farther inland and toward the immediate Kalamazoo area.
Oh, so we'll begin to hear those forecasts west of U.S. 131.
That's right.
We only hear those in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah. We should expect it, Bob. I'm not going to complain.
Okay.
I'm a cold weather guy.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And I would take August out of the calendar if I had to pick a month to delete.
The dog day.
Yeah, that's not me. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, Roger.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Take care.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Meteorologist Bob Larson. Always fun talking with him. We've got a pair of tickets to give away to About Time, and Michael, my able producer, you have come up with a suitable trivia question.
Yes.
And the question is, my friend,
who was the last Detroit Tigers player to hit 50 home runs in one season?
And the movie About Time is from the creators of Love Actually, Notting Hill, and Four Weddings and a Funeral. But guys, don't have your deodorant break down, because when I looked it up, it's listed as a science fiction movie. And so it's don't be afraid to go to the theater. If you know the answer to Michael's trivia question, give him a call, 382-4280, 877-382-4280. And while he's talking on that phone, you and I are going to talk to Libby Cogswell from Ashtamo Township. Libby, how you doing this afternoon?
Good, Roger. How are you?
Oh, I'm fat and sassy. Understand you're going to have a hearing tonight on how the township will police itself, or at least the amount of policing done in the township.
That's correct. We have the public hearing tonight on the role for the expanded area for police protection, the special assessment district. It's also our annual meeting for all of our 2014 budget and other assessments.
Oh, okay.
It's a comprehensive budget meeting.
Oh, I would so look forward to those were I on the board. Just kidding. Let's talk about policing in the township. Crime. Give us an idea where crime is headed.
Well, actually, the ad hoc police committee that looked at this for a couple of years did look at the crime levels, and since about 08, crime has been steady. However, so the reason we're looking to expand the amount of police protection that the township provides is not based on just the crime level, but on how the township is currently servicing the crime.
Mm-hmm.
So it first came to me from the fire chief that there were issues in terms of police getting to scenes where they are at, and then the subcommittee looked at not just that, but in a broad way, and looked at comparable townships, by population and by SEV, and a couple of the townships that were closely comparable have, you know, a number of officers that's in the high 20s. Ashtamo has 7 officers, and so the subcommittee looked at what the appropriate level of service should be going forward, currently and going forward, and recommended an increase. And it is a dramatic increase from what we have,
mm-hmm.
going from essentially mm-hmm. 7 officers to 12 and a half. But the feeling is that it's needed, and it's not jumping all the way to the high 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Libby, you mentioned that the fire chief brought up a concern over sheriff's deputies not arriving at an incident where the fire department was called. Why is that an issue?
Well, I should clarify that. It's not arriving, but there are certain instances, say, for example, someone is having a very unfortunate situation with mental health and is suicidal.
Okay.
And the fire department cannot enter until an officer arrives in case that person is also not only suicidal but violent.
And armed, yeah.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
And so that's one instance. And so it's, you know, the fire department, they're trained medical first responders. They want to, you know, they're putting out fires. They're helping. They want to get there, and they want to help this person, and they have to hold back until the officer arrives.
And they can provide that help in a safe environment. Understand. Libby, I had, we talked about the 9-11 system last week, and talk to me about how the 9-11 dispatch system interfaces with not just Oshtemo Township, but a number of township fire departments, and why is that an issue?
I guess just a little background, and I don't know the year that this started, but we're talking decades ago. The township and all of the townships agreed that the county would provide the fire dispatch. So they, at the time, the township could have set up their own dispatch, but there was an agreement made with the county at that time that the county would be the PSAP, is what they call it, for all of the townships to provide the fire dispatch.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what they have been doing for decades. And, well, as you know, then the issue with 911 is broader than the fire dispatch.
But, Oh, yeah.
In terms of there being five PSAPs then in the county. So the communication between the different dispatches is where some of there are some service issues. I'd like to focus on the service.
And are there plans? Why is that this arrangement that was made years ago, why is that in flux at this point? Is it the sheriff's department can't, that's who actually runs the dispatch center for the township fire departments, correct?
Correct.
And,
but they have the, in that dispatch building, they're actually, I believe it's three PSAPs operating. It's the county, it's the city, and it's Kalamazoo Township. So they're all in the same building, but they're still operating as three separate dispatch centers.
Okay.
So you can have that. That just becomes a little more difficult to in the communication for the emergencies.
So as the township adds the increased police protection through the sheriff's department, is there a plan to for the township then to have its own 911 dispatch center for its deputies that serve the township?
That has never come up as an idea. I think the, I guess this is me speaking personally, I think it makes more sense to have the combined county dispatch so that you avoid those communication issues. So I support the consolidation of the 911 in a truer sense versus the next step from being in the same building to actually being the same dispatch.
Okay. Okay.
Service.
Yeah. The feeling is that there's $1.5 million that's going to be raised on commercial and apartments. Is that correct?
And I think that's not correct.
No, that's $5.5 million, and it's $1.5 million for the rest of the township?
Now, let me clarify, too. There's a correction there as well. The residential, noticed was up to 1.25 mils, not 1.5. So
okay.
There was an error there. And then the commercial district was noticed to go up to 5.5 mils. And that will have to be the board decision tonight, whether they go the full way or whether they go to something different.
Okay.
We can't go more than 5.5 for commercial or 1.25 for residential, but it could go the opposite, less.
So if the township finds they want to increase police protection again down the road, what would the process be if you're already at the max under the present ordinance? Would it require a new ordinance?
I would say that when I say this is the max, that's the max for this year, because that was the amount that was noticed in the newspaper.
Ah, okay. So
there is a legal process for noticing. That's not the max it could go to. However, the sentiment I hear from other board members is they don't want to do this multiple times. It needs to be, analyzed and determined and set at such a rate that then it's it handles the service.
Sure.
Quite some time.
Sure. I appreciate your taking time out of your busy afternoon and spending energy talking to me versus preparing for tonight's meeting. And enjoyed talking with you, and thanks for chatting with us.
Thanks, Roger.
Have a good one, Libby.
Okay.
Libby Cogswell, she is the township supervisor at Oshtemo Township, and there is a public meeting on raising millage for increased sheriff's protection in the township. 33 degrees. Michael has stepped out. We'll give you the winner of the tickets to see About Time right after a news update.
The Trifecta continues after CBS News and Kalamazoo's News from the WKZO.com newsroom on 590 WKZO Kalamazoo.